Today's episode is made possible by Affinity Solutions. Unlock your business's potential with actionable insights into consumer spending, powered by Affinity Solutions. With exclusive insights from over 140 million cards, Affinity Solutions showcases consumer purchase behavior with unprecedented clarity. Seize the opportunity to reshape your strategy with accuracy, execute with precision, and measure with confidence. Affinity Solutions equips you to outperform in today's competitive landscape. Step into the future of analytics with Affinity Solutions today.
Those are some of the questions that I'm thinking about right now. Is like, it's great to build all these tools, but it's not a instance of if you build it, they will come. We really do have to measure, is this improving anybody's lives or not? And I don't know yet, but I think that we'll get there eventually.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, December 14th, aka less than 2 weeks to Christmas. Good God. Dan, Jacob, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Affinity Solutions. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks. Let's meet them. We start with our VP Content Strategy and Operations, who also works on a lot of our generative AI initiatives at the company. Based in New York, it's Dan Van Dyke.
Hey, Marcus. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, fella. Thank you for being around. We're also joined by one of our analysts on the connectivity and tech briefing based in California. It's Jacob Bourne.
Hey, Marcus. Glad to be here.
Hey, chap. All right, gents. Today's fact. This one I thought was bloody fascinating. How did Roman emperors order the death of a gladiator?
Yes, the thumbs up, thumbs down, right?
That's right, yeah.
Kind of. So it is actually a thumbs up, like a drawn sword, to indicate that he should be killed. Thumbs down was never used. To spare the life of a losing gladiator, the thumb was tucked in like a sheathed weapon. Why the misunderstanding? Well, there was a painting called, I'm going to butcher this because it's in Latin, but Police Verso by a French artist, Jean-Léon Jérôme. And in the painting, Roman gladiator is waiting for the emperor, who is stretching his thumb down to give the death sentence. Historians agree that Jérôme wrongly assumed Police Verso, which means turned thumb, was turned down, when it actually means turned up. Why do they use the thumbs down then in the film Gladiator? This painting was apparently the inspiration for Ridley Scott to direct the film. As soon as he saw it, he was like, yes, I'm going to direct it. But he still went with the thumbs down because that's what most people know, and he didn't want to confuse the audience.
But really, it kind of shows the bloodthirsty nature of the whole business, right? If thumbs up means death.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. Yeah. Let's move on. Today's real topic, generative AI in the workplace. So today we're talking about generative AI in the lead and using generative AI at work. More specifically, no other news today. There's too much to talk about here. So let's get into it, gents, as fast as possible. We're going to be talking about generative AI at work, how people feel about it, whether companies should be designing their own generative AI products, getting one off the shelf, some of the do's and don'ts. So a lot to talk about. But we'll start with what people within companies should already know about generative AI. There's a recent BBC article by Suraj Shah noting that job postings mentioning AI or generative AI, we'll say Gen AI for short throughout this, have globally more than doubled in the past 2 years. Job postings mentioning it, most according to LinkedIn. We estimate that 58% of Gen AI users are using it for work. 65% will next year. And 71% of people using Gen AI will use it for work the year after that. That's 83 million Americans by 2025. Dan, I'll start with you because, as I mentioned up top, you have been working on a lot of our generative AI initiatives. What do employers expect staff to know about AI at this point, Gen AI?
I think at this point, we're still in the early days of figuring out what Gen AI means for our business. And so there's not a lot of expectation beyond the fact that we hope that everybody is trying out the tools and figuring out different use cases for how it could speed up, you know, processes that they're taking on or just make for better content. And so a couple of examples of that have really surprised me were one use case that somebody on the team, Peter Newman, came up with was, you know, we create all these excellent forecasts that, you know, you mentioned Gen AI forecasts in the lead up. Mm-hmm. And that involves updating a lot of different spreadsheets. And so Peter Newman came up with this idea of what if we could use ChatGPT to speed up the process of creating all these automations that he calls macros to update those spreadsheets. And it just sort of speaks to the fact that as employers, it's not so much a top-down initiative where we're saying like, try this, do that. It's more so we're hearing about a lot of great ideas and it's a question of how do we add fuel to the fire? So how do we get enough people signed up for ChatGPT? How do we get them experimenting? How do we take the people who are front runners and stand up trainings? Those are some of the questions that we're trying to wrestle with across the organization.
Mm-hmm. So the point here is you're not asking anyone to be an expert in this, right? There was a quote by a manager at LinkedIn, Gare Moyes, who was saying employers aren't expecting anyone to become AI experts, but they want professionals to become AI literate, understanding how to use tools available to you to do your job better.
Right. I think that's a great word. Even if you're not using it, you should know the basics, like what the major platforms are, what it does, the capabilities, and also the limitations. And then, you know, getting into more detail, what your company's specific policies are around the use, because a lot of some companies have actually banned ChatGPT. And so that would be kind of, you know, obviously something to know. And there are concerns with the technology that could come up at work, like digital privacy issues and copyright infringement and bias and things like that, that, you know, people certainly should know.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to be careful about folks using this. You want them to, but you want them to safely and with a certain amount of kind of guidance that, because was it Samsung? They just clamped down on ChatGPT use after employees, some engineers reportedly shared source code with the chatbot. So you want folks experimenting, but you want them experimenting safely. And I guess part of the problem here, Dan, is a lot of folks just aren't trained on this. 41% of office workers admitting to currently lacking the technical abilities needed to work alongside and use AI systems, according to our software company ServiceNow. Why do so many folks feel like they don't know what they're up to? Because training hasn't been provided. 2/3 of UK professionals said they'd not been provided with any formal AI training or guidelines from their employer, according to LinkedIn. Can you talk a bit about our approach at Insider Intelligence in terms of trying to train folks on this stuff?
Yeah. So early after ChatGPT was launched, we sort of sat down and started to begin to think about what it meant for our organization. And amidst all the uncertainties, one thing that was clear is that we needed to democratize access to information for, to borrow your phrasing, how to be literate with the tech. And so A was like, we wanted to set out clear permission for folks to begin trying out the tools, but provide guidance that, you know, we want to limit that to the tools that we've had the chance to look through and say, the data sharing requirements are good for our organization. Because you gave the really great example of Samsung, where employees were sharing sensitive information. And every week there's a different story, it feels like, about a breach. You know, the one this week was that now you can ask ChatGPT to repeat the same word infinitely and that it will automatically expose sensitive data in some cases. And so there's just unprecedented risks. But the risks of standing still and doing nothing are, you know, outweighing the risks of moving quickly and beginning to wrap our heads around the technology. So I mentioned step one was just getting everybody across the organization, trying out the different platforms that we had an opportunity to vet. Step two was working with our legal teams and different stakeholders internally to say, what do we advise people with regards to like which information is sensitive and okay to use with ChatGPT? Which should you pump the brakes on? So creating that differentiation was really important. Mm-hmm. And then the third step has been, you know, we've kind of advanced beyond just trying out the tech to beginning to have some use cases internally that we're piloting, we're learning from, always making sure to underscore being really transparent with how we use the technology so that our clients are aware it's not catching anybody off guard, because there were some first movers who definitely were not transparent with how they were using the tech and got burned in the press as a result. So we haven't had that experience, which is as a result of our strategy to move quickly, but not to break things and to be cagey about what we're doing.
Yes. One of those examples was Sports Illustrated. They faced backlash for passing off AI written content as written by humans. Mm. And publishers who have tried using AI to generate news stories, they've kind of backed off a bit because some of the articles that were being created insensitive, inaccurate in a lot of instances. So you've got to be very careful with this. I wonder, Jacob, do you think in 2 years' time, do you think most companies have a chief AI officer?
2 years' time, absolutely. I think it could even happen sooner than that. I mean, this is becoming such an important technology that is, I mean, it's touching every single industry. And I mean, the use cases are just expanding. So I think in order to stay competitive, you know, companies are going to have to adopt the technology. And it's not the easiest thing to adopt because of all these pitfalls. You really need a well-honed strategy. And I think the way to do that is to hire an expert, you know, have a leader.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're at least going to be hired quite quickly in the government, federal government agencies rushing to find over 400 chief AI officers by the end of this year, after President Biden said in his recent AI executive order, which we unpacked, Jacob, the main role of the chief AI officer is to coordinate, innovate, and also risk management,
right,
the agency's use of AI, developing a strategy and deeply interconnecting AI within HR, IT, data, cybersecurity, civil rights, customer experience, etc. They don't come cheap, though. That might be the hindrance here. The lowest chief AI officer salary on Glassdoor, $223,000. The median package for a private sector one, about $300K.
Right.
So they're expensive folks. Dan, how have folks talked about how, at least insider intelligence, we've kind of gone about getting our arms around this technology and starting to experiment? Just because you want to use something doesn't mean that the company is going to be necessarily receptive to that. And I'm wondering how staff, you know, have been feeling, whether it's in our company or what you've been reading about, is, you know, they may be asking themselves, is it really helping? You know, is it how I want to work, perhaps? What kind of advice do you have in terms of trying to make people comfortable with this technology?
Yeah, I would think about it on two levels. Like, one is the challenge of managing up and making sure that there's strategic alignment from different stakeholders that set our strategy across the company to create the conditions by which, like, everybody across the organization is empowered to use the tech responsibly in ways that advance the interests of the business, but that also feel good in terms of their workday. So once you've set some strategic alignment, and thankfully within Insider Intelligence, we're part of the Axel Springer portfolio, and Axel Springer is very AI forward, which sort of, you know, reflects in how all of the portfolio companies are addressing the technology. Once you've gotten strategic alignment, the next step is trying to figure out how to get everybody across the organization bought into beginning to use the tech. And I think it's pretty simple in terms of thinking about, you know, if I am creating content, are the risks of me not adopting this technology greater than or less than the risks of me, you know, using the technology?
Good point.
And it's really clear that it's in everybody's best interest to learn how to use the tech, because it's a technology cycle that is on the same scale as the internet,
right,
the typewriter. It's going to transform the way content is created. And so we as content creators need to get ahead of that to remain relevant, to establish job security as individuals, and collectively for the company to remain competitive as well.
So Jacob, I'm wondering what you think about here, because some folks might struggle to know when to use this technology and when, you know, they just prefer the kind of human touch. Amelia David of The Verge was saying that some employees and companies that have embraced AI early have complained that the first iterations of the model haven't made their lives easier, pointing to a report from The Information noting there was a chatbot Morgan Stanley built with OpenAI and it wasn't used by wealth managers like it was intended. They preferred to call someone, so they didn't end up using this thing. And then this idea that there's a kind of fine line between collaboration and replacement. The Economist was writing that AI could be more innovative than a human, and Karan Jirotra of Cornell University and colleagues compared the idea-generating abilities of the latest version of ChatGPT with those of students at an elite university. They found a human could come up with about 5 ideas in 15 minutes. Armed with an AI, the human could come up with, or the AI could come up with, 200.
Right.
And so, you know, you're working with this thing, but at the same time, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, at what point do I just become obsolete, maybe?
Yeah, it's certainly a concern that people have. And I think it comes down again to this word, this term, generative AI literacy. And that entails also knowing how to use it appropriately. And I think part of the problem is the enthusiasm and frenzy around the emergence of the sector has created a lot of hype where it's more intelligent than people. It can do everything. It's been overhyped to a certain degree. Certainly, it's going to get better, right? So there's that aspect of it. In terms of where it's at now, it really is a collaborative tool. And so people are trying to use it to do their, you know, ChatGPT does their jobs for them, for example. That's not a realistic and appropriate use of the tool. It's really about knowing your specific use case and how you can use it as like an assistant. You still need to have oversight. You still need to do your due diligence. Human creativity still plays a huge role in whatever you're doing. But ChatGPT and other generative AI tools certainly can help you get things done faster. It can help, help you with brainstorming, for example. So there's a lot of different ways in which it can help. But again, it's a collaborative tool, not something that replaces anyone at this point. But yeah, and I think it just comes down to knowing your specific use case and how to use it most effectively.
Right. I feel like a big part of this also is the framing of this. How are you introducing this to folks? Because why am I using generative AI? Emma Parry, professor of HR at the Cranfield School of Management, was saying, rather than constantly asking people, how can we make things more efficient, which people don't love to hear a lot of the time, we should ask, how can we make things better to find a way to benefit from hybrid human AI workforce?
And I think we're also kind of battling against human nature with this too, because you have this powerful tool, and then I think it does kind of make people inclined to become a little lazy and kind of not feel like you want to put that extra mile with the human creativity and checking for accuracy. And that's also where the issues.
So let's talk about some of these different products. And let's start with the idea of a custom product. At the start of November, OpenAI said they would soon let anyone create their own version of ChatGPT. Alex Heath of The Verge explaining this is a no-code way to make custom AI agents called GPTs for all sorts of tasks, available for ChatGPT Plus subscribers and OpenAI Enterprise customers who can make internal-only GPTs for their employees. You can buy these custom AI agents at the GPT store, where OpenAI says it will pay creators based on how much their GPTs are used. What might one of these look like? Mr. Heath points to two examples. To help attendees navigate events, so you could build one of these just for one specific event, or you could build one to act as a writing coach, perhaps. Dan, do you think every company is going to end up with their own custom version of ChatGPT? And if so, what might that look like?
Yeah, I do think every company will have their own version of ChatGPT or several versions.
Oh,
and so as an example of this, just over the past couple of weeks since that was announced, I was able to make, GPTs for doing things like creating report notifications to test out how well it did that. The idea being that a person would still read the notification, refine it, add that human level of quality on top of what it could output. But I was able to get a proof of concept probably within, 10 minutes. And on the product side too, our head of product was able to create one that extracted metadata from charts. So all sorts of use cases internally, there are ways that customized ChatGPT instances can boost the efficiency of those use cases or just make them better, to borrow your terminology. And I think as an organization, one of the most important questions that we're wrestling with is you deploy those tools. How do you measure, are they succeeding? Are they not succeeding? Are they actually helping anybody? Do people like them? Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the questions that I'm thinking about right now is it's great to build all these tools, but it's not an instance of if you build it, they will come. We really do have to measure, is this improving anybody's lives or not? And I don't know yet. But I think that we'll get there eventually, because if you look at your workday and you divide it into tasks that are pretty repetitive, basically following a script, that type of work, fills up a lot of my day. I'm taking notes for meetings. I don't like doing that type of work. I think most of it in the future will be erased and our work will start to be more interesting, higher level, Jacob, you adding perspective based on your having covering the technology space for a number of years and thinking more so about analytical insight that you could bring to the table as opposed to taking notes in a meeting or, any other sort of repetitive task that fills up your day now.
Right.
Yeah. Updating, different economic indicators to a model, said Peter, who was on our forecasting team, was saying, there's a number of things which we do, we have to do, we don't love to do, and maybe being able to focus on the more interesting parts of our job would be great. If companies don't choose to make their own custom generative AI chatbot, they could instead use other corporate chatbots off the shelf. OpenAI's ChatGPT Enterprise, Microsoft's Copilot, Google's Duet AI. Or now companies might select Amazon's Q AI Assistant. So Q as being a play, it's a play on the word question. Because of a chatbot's conversational nature, the chatbot's developed by Amazon's cloud computing team. It focuses on workplaces, not consumers, aimed at helping employees with daily tasks, think summarizing documents, answering customer queries, generating charts, explaining company policies, even a little coding. Jacob, what do you make of Amazon's AI Q bot for companies?
Well, I think it's big. Amazon, of course, is a major public cloud provider. And so, of course, people are going to be using this. Amazon launched its Bedrock generative AI platform, but I think this is probably Amazon's biggest generative AI announcement to date.
Oh, wow.
It also comes at a time when OpenAI has got some difficulties going on. They had a major outage recently. There's some downtime on ChatGPT that people are experiencing. Then, of course, the CEO, Sam Altman's firing. And so I think there is probably some shaky customer confidence going on with OpenAI. And so Amazon releasing this Q model right now is very timely. And of course, it comes with added privacy and safety safeguards, which I think is important, especially given that these custom GPTs that OpenAI had released, while exciting, researchers are finding that they're kind of a digital privacy nightmare. So if Amazon's privacy safeguards do end up working well, I think that people will probably get, the companies especially are going to be flocking to this model. Or actually, one notable thing about Q is that it draws upon the power of multiple AI models. And so it's probably going to function a bit differently than some of the other leading products in the market. Now, the other thing to know, and of course, it's never a dull moment in the generative AI sector. Just last Wednesday, Google launched its most powerful model to date, its Gemini model. It's a multimodal model that it actually had just said that it was going to delay till 2024. Now it's out today. And it just shows that there's this enormous pressure. These companies are under this enormous pressure to get these models to market, even if they're not quite ready for at their top level of performance. But there's just so much competition right now. And then, of course, Meta, shortly after Gemini hit the market, Meta announced that it's coming out with its latest image generator. So already Q has fresh competition, and I think that's what we're going to see throughout 2024.
One of the things it does have going for it, Q, that is it starts at a lower price point, $20 per month per user. Google and Microsoft charge $30 per user per month for enterprise chatbots. That may not seem like a big difference, but when you start to scale that up, it can get quite expensive quite quickly. Jens, let's end with some do's and don'ts of using generative AI in the workplace. Maybe we'll start with one from each category, Dan.
Yeah, I would say one do is be transparent with how you're using it, both internally to make sure that everybody across the organization has given their sign off from legal to marketing to product, and externally so that clients aren't surprised, and that if you are using Gen AI to summarize information, that they're going to look at it with an extra level of fact-checking to verify some of those findings. Mm-hmm. So that would be my biggest do.
Yeah.
Okay.
My biggest do is to never enter sensitive information as an input, as like a prompt, whether it's personal information or organizational information, because there could be a security issue.
Wait, this is your do?
Oh, sorry. My do not. Sorry.
Wait, we're doing... Don't listen to Jacob, everyone. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Okay.
He's trying to sabotage your companies. What's your biggest, that's your biggest don't? What's your biggest do?
My biggest do is to basically get the hang of the basics around prompt engineering so that you can get the most out of the technology, and then always check for accuracy in the app.
Okay. And Dan, your biggest don't?
I would say don't count out some of the open source models that are emerging on the market. So we didn't really talk about them in the course of this conversation. We talked about Amazon, Google, and OpenAI. Mm-hmm. But there's a really interesting groundswell happening where there are small models that could really upstage some of the larger models when it comes to niche tasks. And that could be a really interesting dynamic for the tech space as a whole to see some of the smaller players, smaller models begin to emerge and eventually eclipse large ones.
Okay, we did that in a weird order, but the do's were transparent, be transparent, make sure things are accurate. We've also talked about offering training, hands-on training would be great as well. Get people using the thing, sets of guidelines. Be targeted as well, this concept of the lighthouse approach, selecting a project that can signal value to the rest of the company. So but you don't have to use this for everything. Use it for the things you need it for. The don'ts, don't share everything. Don't count out the smaller players are some really good ones as well, gents. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much for being around, fellas. Thank you to Jacob.
Thanks so much, Marcus. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you to Dan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thank you to Victoria, who edits the show. Welcome back. Thank you to James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team, and Sophie, who does our social media. Thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Affinity Solutions.